On that note, we're ready to go.
We're ready? All right. Good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, September 27, 2016, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, thank you and good morning. First item, as always, is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Today we have Arden Greiner going to speak to us because he got left out last week when we had a long meeting and you didn't get to say what you wanted to say. Arden, please start by introducing yourself.
Yeah, I'm Arden Greiner from Sherman Township trustee. How long did the meeting go last week?
What did we finish up?
12:30?
12:30.
Okay. This will only take a minute today. I stumbled onto this, what each city and the counties has for TIF districts, what they retain for a year. I gave you guys copies of it before. So I just wanted to mention in open session that there's a large variation or inequitable how these guys participate in the TIF program. So, and the only one I'm going to point out today is like Huxley that wants almost $80,000 from the county, and they withhold over $2.3 million every year of their property tax in their own TIF districts, as well as taking ours. So anyhow, this information's available at the auditor's office. That's all I got this morning.
Perfect. Arden, thank you. Love information.
Here's some extra copies if anybody wants them.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day.
You bet.
Next is consideration of minutes, and this is both the special election canvas on the 20th and our marathon board meeting on the 20th.
Move approval.
Second.
Both.
And we got a motion and a second on both. Any additions, corrections, or notations? I would make one notation. I said this to Arden before the meeting started. I tried really hard to represent Arden's feelings on TIF last week since he wasn't able to stay, and that is reflected in the minutes.
Right.
Clinton.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed, board.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions pass. Consent agenda, board, please add road closures 1717, 1718, and 1719, and please add utility permit 17025.
Move to approve the consent agenda with the aforementioned additions.
Second.
Motion and a second. Chief.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes with noted changes. Public hearing item. This is how long Arden would have had to wait if he wanted to speak during the public hearing. Public hearing item. Third consideration of Ordinance 242 amending Chapter 8, Urban Renewal of Story County Code of Ordinances. Leanne Harder. All right, Leanne, we've been through this twice. This is the third time. Anything new for the board to consider?
There is nothing new. Now we recommend approval and third consideration.
Okay. Questions for Leanne before we open the public hearing? All right. In that case, we will open the public hearing and ask if there is anybody who would like to address Ordinance 242. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll close the public hearing. I'll turn to the board for action.
Move approval of Ordinance 242, amending Chapter 8 of the Urban Renewal of Four Story County, Arkansas.
Second.
We've got a motion and a second to approve Ordinance 242, third and final consideration. Any discussion?
No.
Clinton?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Ordinance 242 passes.
Thank you again, Leanne, for all your work.
As always, good job. Let's see. Additional items today. We don't have any. We've got agency reports, though, and we've got Department of Human Services quarterly report, Darren Thompson. I always like when Darren comes. Darren and I get to serve together on DCAT, and DCAT has been an interesting time. Wouldn't surprise me if Darren maybe mentioned something about DCAT today.
That is correct. I will make just a couple brief comments with regards to the report that was submitted. Just highlight a couple items with regards to that. And one of those is the decategorization CPVC program that we have that goes with the Iowa code and requirements that we have for that. We have a new coordinator in that role. Natalie Reich has left that position and is now working with the juvenile court under a contracted position. And we now have Jenny Feltz, who is our new decriminalization and CPVC coordinator. With this particular role, we have actually joined with the Boone decriminalization group in order to give a much more uniform and appropriate services provided to both groups while maintaining as efficient a system as possible with regards to the actual coordination efforts themselves. This frees up some money, which allows us to do some other things that we've really been wanting to do. And one of those major criteria is the school-based process for credit recovery, which has worked phenomenally in Ames and Gilbert most recently, where we've seen some tremendous I don't know how to describe the fact and the elation that you get whenever you see that many seniors actually graduating on time with their students together as one. So what a fantastic effort that is, and we hope to be able to implement that again, and I know we're working towards that and getting those contracts in place here in November. So that is one of those added benefits of being able to do that and have kind of the economies of scale that goes along with that. You'll see that in the two or three pages that go with decriminalization. You'll notice that we've had to reduce down a lot of our contracts for this year. That's simply just a matter of economics and understanding. When we have limited funds, that's all that we can do. With the social worker teams have been doing exceptionally well. We've got a lot of heavy caseloads. They continue to be a little bit higher than normal, but overall still manageable with the group that we have with regards to that. One note of item of importance that I put in the report as well is that our social worker teams have done an excellent job of fulfilling some of the federal measures that we are looked at on a consistent basis, and actually is near the top at a 91.59% of child visits. So in other words, they're visiting their children every 30 days.
91%.
91%. Almost a 10 out of 10 kids are getting that visit. And that also takes into account the youth that we have placed out of state, the youth that are placed throughout the state of Iowa in group care and other situations where children are better served because of the unique nature of their needs. So that has been a fantastic result. And they pretty much lead the state right now in that branch.
And you say nearing the top. What is the top?
The top is approximately 93%. Here's the interesting piece whenever you look at that, and I'll just diverge for one brief moment. Our caseload, so the Des Moines service area encompasses 15 counties, and Story is one of the primary counties within there. Our caseload for that grouping is about 26% of the entire state. There are five service areas for DHS. So you have to think about the Des Moines service area, even though it should only represent one-fifth of the state, actually represents just a little over a quarter of the state when it comes to the child welfare cases. So taking that into account, you can see that many of these other areas have a caseload that is significantly lower than ours, but yet even with the high caseload, our staff are able to still get out there and see and show the importance to these families and be able to work together with the county attorney's office here, with many other groups, in order to be able to efficiently work with these families to reunite them in a positive relationship.
Sure. Now, what would you account for the increase in this particular area? Is it mainly because of the program service delivery that's there and the outreach to families and children in need, or what?
I think it's a combination of many of those things, as well as an active and participatory relationship between DHS and the county itself. When you have people out there looking and actively understanding what child abuse is according to Iowa code, and you have that relationship and our increased relationship with schools, everybody's willing to share that information and to help these youth. We're not out there to be punitive, which many would believe that we are. That's the great benefit, is that we've got the relationship there so that they're coming to us early, we're catching those cases. Yes, there are many more than what we would believe we'd like to have, but yet we're hoping that the best outcomes are happening because we're catching them sooner. And that's because of the partnerships and me and the schools being willing to say, hey, we believe there's a concern here. Let's step up and take care of it. And the county's attorney's office being willing to actually look at it from that perspective and seeing the human and the human services field that we have. So it's all been great things that have been happening, and we're real confident of that future continuing to hold steady and improving. The last piece that I want to just focus on is public assistance. The group that we have within the county here over at the Human Services Building brought in fiscal year 16 approximately $73,669,000 to the residents of Story County. This would include the food assistance, the Medicaid Title 19, as well as the family investment, which is always a limited because it's like a cash assistance program. So the food assistance is a pretty key one, as well as the Medicaid Title 19.
But that's down from the last 2 years.
Give me a
synopsis of why you think it's down.
It is. There are two factors that we believe that are directly impacting it. One of them has to do with the employment rate. When the employment rate, unemployment rate goes down, employment rate goes up. Consequently, we see this impacted, and our numbers should go down correspondingly. We believe also the Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act has helped to ensure that people are receiving appropriate benefits from their employer, and then those that are not are signed up. We've seen an increase in the number that are signed up. We also have some changes with the new MCO process, and those numbers may not be fully reflected into this, as some of the reporting for that is still in the process of being distributed from Capital.
But you wouldn't say that there's $10 million of unmet need out there. You think this is more has to do with we don't have as much need coming forward?
As much need, as well as with the MCO process changing, the reporting functionality for the MCO is now through a contractor, private contractor, in lieu of being completely handled as one entity in the state. And so that can be a little bit different in the reporting structure. They're still working on ensuring that the reporting of those numbers are consistent with the way these numbers were reported.
So this 73 is not a completely consistent report with the 83 that was a year before.
That is correct.
Okay. All right. When do we expect to catch up where we're actually comparing apples to apples?
I just received a response back last week that they continue to work on that documentation and ensuring that these public records, which are out on the DHS website, will be updated in order to include the MCO billing process as well.
Yeah, so I'm one of those that when we see a blip, a downward blip like this, I want to understand why it's occurring. And if part of it is, low unemployment rate, great, that makes sense to me. If part of it is that we're just not reporting things the same way, I really want to dig in and understand what the last couple of years would have looked like if we were reporting the same way we are this time. And so I'll be really interested to hear that once we get to the end of it, Darren.
And we believe that we'll have an answer for you here coming in the late fall here, early winter. That is our anticipation. You can see that we've reduced by, it was $8.4 million in food assistance, and it was $7.8 million. So you see that certainly going down, and that corresponds with exactly what we're seeing. The significant decrease was in that Medicaid Title 19, and that's the area where we believe with the documentation from the MCOs and that billing procedure being merged into this information, we'll have a much more accurate figure.
Sure, but while it's a relatively small amount of money, I also go to family investment and the TANF dollars, and we're less than half there. I mean, granted, now you're talking about $500,000 and $250,000, but it's still a reduction of 50%. And so I want to understand those things, and we need to ensure, do everything we can to ensure that it's not just unmet needs.
And the top two, the food assistance and the family investment, are not impacted. That is actual numbers. Those are accurate and true. And so those numbers will fluctuate over the years as you see trends going up and down.
Sure.
with regards to the amount of employment or unemployment. If we looked way back, we could even give a trend. So in other words, the current number for, let's take food assistance because it's one that most people are familiar with. In fiscal year 2011, it was $10.3 million. If I look back to data prior to that, and we can actually go back all the way to 2008, and that's just my tracking mechanism that I have, that puts us at about $4.8 million. So you can see just from 2008 to 2011, the difference of $4.8 million and the significant jump that we had here to $10.3 million. And that corresponds directly, of course, with the bubble that burst.
Yeah, so you're suggesting to me if we put a graph showing unemployment rate next to this graph, we would see similar kind of trends up and down in both.
That is what we are interpreting it to be, yes.
All right. Questions for Darren?
Darren, was it, how many years ago, 3 or 4, that there was maybe a consolidation within this particular area? And I know a higher relationship or with Boone probably became a little bit more coordinated. Can you speak at all? I mean, did that have anything to do when you start tracking numbers, the fact that we got data now, I hate to use the word more accurate of actual numbers, but when you see a difference between several years ago, and then I was thinking, unless I'm getting the two programs mixed up, but, you know, with Boost and DCAT and so forth, there was a shift, I think, in how that service was being delivered.
There was a transitional period whenever empowerment was then combined and became Early Childhood Iowa, or ECI. And that particular combination was accomplished in order to better reflect the nature of the dollars that were available along with the ability to deliver that service efficiently. That's the combination that happened. I believe that was in 2011, 2012, I believe. 2010 was the combination of the service areas and the Department of Human Services going from 8 down to 5, and so that was another reorganization that took place by the legislature, again, in order to accommodate both the fiscal and management, effective management of the entire state for the Department of Human Services. We would feel that it has been extremely successful in the way and the outcomes that it's had, as well as before we ourselves out of Des Moines did not represent Story County, and now we do. So we like that. You add a great benefit to our group as a whole and gives us a much clearer perspective of the things that can be accomplished when there is a great relationship between ourselves as a service area with DHS and the county. And so we want to continue that kind of great partnership that maybe at times is a bit of a struggle because it's not an active partnership with other counties as it is here. And that's what makes this enjoyable for us.
Thank you.
Marty, anything for Darren?
No, I would just appreciate what you shared with us this morning.
No, Darren, thanks.
Thank you.
Next item is Emergency Management Quarterly Update. Melissa Spencer. Melissa, are we drying out?
I hope so. if it's okay with the board, I would like to just hit some highlights from our report, and then I'll talk about the flash flooding that has been going on previous to the weekend. A couple things I wanted to highlight from our report. Back at the end of August, Story County Emergency Management staff facilitated a after-action meeting with DuPont and first responder agencies, along with the Board of Supervisors, DNR, and Conservation, to discuss the issue of the ongoing issue of the Stover fires. Some of the topics discussed were lightning reduction, ember control, air quality, and site security, as well as looking at methods for continuing testing of Stover to learn more about the behavior of it, how it burns, and so forth. DuPont has been very good about recognizing that lightning is going to be a continued threat. They are also committed to working with the local first responders on those areas that I mentioned before to try to determine how best they can be addressed. The risk is still always going to be there, but there are proactive measures being taken to try to minimize the risk as much as possible. And we do appreciate DuPont's willingness to take to step up to the plate and work with our local first responders.
Yeah, so it was a really good after-action meeting. DuPont was well represented. They had higher-level executives come in specifically for the meeting. I was encouraged by it. What I suggest, more than suggested, what I asked for as chair of the Emergency Management Commission and in my role as current chair of the Board of Supervisors is that this body get regular updates. I suggest a six-month span. The problem that I see is 3 or 4 years ago when we had the first Stover fire, and it might have been the first Stover fire nationally at that point, I suggested they went through this and they looked at some possible actions, and then it just kind of, in my view, stagnated. Well, I suggested that we utilize our position as a Board of Supervisors to make sure that this does not stagnate now, that they continue to look at all the possibilities, and we go from there.
And we'll continue to update the board through our quarterly reports or if as necessary, so the board can be kept up to date on the efforts with DuPont and the first responders. Our planning, we were quite busy with planning this last quarter. We are still continue to plan with many different community partners and a wide variety of issues. We feel the projects will continue to build our culture of preparedness in Story County and will also promote a whole community involvement, which is a national goal. With our training, this last month we conducted six separate training courses for the emergency operations or EOC staff. With this last exercise, we kind of ramped up the intensity to continue to build their confidence and their skills to bring them as close to a real-life event as possible. And with that said, we do have a state requirement to complete a full-size exercise in 2017. We are proposing, or the commission has approved us to do a full-scale exercise with the Emergency Operations Center. And so I'm asking, we propose the exercise to be April 26th of 2017. So we are asking the board to allow for department heads and elected officials to release their staff to be able to participate in the exercise.
And say the date again that you're asking for?
April 26th of 2017.
April 26th of 2017. So what I would suggest is that we make sure that we get as much feedback as we can from our elected officials and department heads before we set any kind of date like that. And so, Alyssa, I was just thinking this through. It might make sense to run this through our seven-day review process where we tentatively set a date, but then we send it out and we ask for feedback and then come back and formally set a date. I'm suggesting a week from today to give all of our department heads and elected officials an opportunity to weigh in prior to it finally getting set.
And I would assume that the training, the individual people that department heads and elected officials have designated to go through the initial EOC training will be the key people that will probably be spending time in the EOC area, or
yes.
I can see this being expanded beyond that.
Currently, the people that have been designated by the department heads and elected officials are the ones that would fill those positions. We do plan 3D to be contingent on 24/7 operations, and the participation is purely voluntary upon the gracious consent of the department heads, the board of supervisors, and elected officials. So,
okay. So then, can I have? It would not be a formal motion, it's not formal action, but direction, clear direction from the Board of Supervisors that it is our preference that April 29th be set as
26th.
See, I'm already screwed it up. April 26th be set as the date for this countywide activation of the EOC. Mm-hmm. You agree, Wayne?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, Marty, you're good?
I'm good.
Alyssa, I would ask you to get this out to all the departments, work with
with Melissa to get the right language, get it out to all our department heads, and then it will be an action item on next week's agenda, and that's the opportunity for everybody to weigh in between now and next Tuesday. Melissa can add it. Work with Alyssa to get everything out to all of our department heads and elected officials.
Okay. And one last thing on a report that I did want to highlight. The Story County Emergency Management has tried to build a Story County Medical Reserve Corps for the last several years. Due to the inability to secure a medical director, which is required for the program to work, and changes to the funding mechanisms, we have decided, the commission voted to dissolve the Story County Medical Reserve Corps. It is a planning gap that we are fully aware of, and we will continue to work to find other ways to fill that gap. But the funding, the award funding was returned to NACO, which is the grant agency for the Medical Reserve Corps across the country, and we're just going to continue to try to fill that gap.
It was amazing and frustrating to me that we were not able to identify someone. I mean, it makes sense. I understand that it's liability and an extra requirement that not a lot of our medical personnel want to take on. But I really thought we'd be able to find somebody in Story County, and we just were not able to.
It was a long process, and it kind of just came to a point that we had to decide if we couldn't secure somebody, was it worth continuing the effort? And because we could not secure the medical director, and then the funding greatly changed to almost no funding. Just was not something that was going to continue to be sustainable. So with that said on the report, I was going to provide the board an update on the flash flooding that has taken place. Thursday into Friday, the city of Ames and many areas across the southern part of the county experienced a 6-inch rain event in a very short period of time. As a result of that, we have been hearing the city of Ames, as well as our office, has been receiving phone calls from the public asking about assistance. Story County currently does not meet the threshold for FEMA level disaster, but there is the state of Iowa's individual assistance program, which does allow for individuals that meet 200% of the poverty guidelines to receive a grant to help them recover from the disaster. So the emergency, to receive this funding, the Emergency Management Commission yesterday declared a disaster on behalf of all the jurisdictions in Story County. This allows us to access the Iowa Individual Assistance Program. I'm waiting for confirmation from Iowa Homeland Security today that the governor has included us in the disaster proclamation. Even though we are only going for this one piece of services, the governor still does have to officially declare us as Story County as a disaster area. So once that approval comes from the governor, I'm anticipating any time this morning, we will send out as much information as we can to the media and through our social media outlets. I've been working with Leanne Harder as the PIO for the county to get a strategy in place to push that information out. Again, with the Iowa Individual Assistance Program, it is income-based. So there will be a portion of the population that will not qualify for that. But we do believe through phone calls that were received yesterday that we do have families that are in need and that could meet that income threshold. So that's kind of where that stands as of this morning, and I'm just waiting for final confirmation from the governor.
Talk for a minute, Melissa, about how we got to that declaration running through the EMC rather than the Board of Supervisors. It can come from either place.
It can come from either place. Iowa Code 29C, subsection 22, talks about the state mutual aid assistance compact. And in order to be able to receive services, it covers mutual aid assistance compact and other resources. So we believe that the interpretation of that allows the commission, as one of the entities of the state mutual aid assistance compact, to be able to declare a disaster to be able to get access to those services. The key is we have to declare a disaster to enter to get these services. So it's our interpretation that the Emergency Management Commission can declare that disaster to receive those services.
And so the intent there is the Emergency Management Commission is one of the places here in Story County that includes not only representation from the county, with one of us and the sheriff serving, on that group, but also the mayor of every municipality. And since this was a countywide declaration, including all our municipalities, I think we made the decision that it made at least as much sense, maybe more sense, to run it through that group rather than the Board of Supervisors.
Correct. Yeah. So we did have the emergency management chair, which is Rick, sign that declaration.
That was what I was going to ask him, because yeah. I understand that in years past, when we've had similar ones, the fact that you were chair of the emergency management, if technically you're signing off on that, I always thought that that request had to come. Either through the Board of Supervisors, and in this case, you working in cohort as also chair of the emergency management.
Correct.
So that's why I was wondering whether that...
So it is my signature on it, but it's not my signature as chair of the Board of Supervisors.
Right.
It's my signature as chair of the Emergency Management Committee.
Okay.
Right.
Yes. That's interesting, yeah. Because I know that there were a couple times we were out and, for instance, 2 years ago, we had new tornadoes and so forth, and I had to be summoned to make sure that we requested that in a formal manner. So that's good to know, because sometimes, you know, you're just not available, and then that's the next line of control that can make that decision. And so, good. Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa. Any questions for Melissa?
Yes, a story with legs to it, and I keep bumping into people that want to ask me about it, but is DuPont going to be doing anything different on the staging of their Stover when they go to production here this fall, winter?
The only information I have from DuPont is that as the plant goes in production, the larger Stover areas will be reduced. You won't see as many of the large pads and things. There will be a certain amount that, especially south of the plant and south of Lincoln Way, that will continue to be a large storage site, because that is their contingency site should, you know, in the middle of winter, Lincoln Way not be able to, you know, resources not be able to get to the plant. They are looking to move forward to more of a individual farm site storage, where that farmer will store the Stover from his site at his farm until it is picked up and used at the site. Do I know what the storage sites are going to look like in the future? No, I don't. I don't have a clearer picture of that from DuPont, but they assure me that some of these large storage sites will have their volume reduced. That's the best answer I have.
No, the question exists out there. It's just like,
yes, it does.
You know, I think the meme is out there that production is running, is in the offing, and people are wondering, they know they're not failing this year and what they're going to do on a going forward basis, so now I have something to tell people.
The last CAP meeting I attended that DuPont has participated in, their report was that they are not abandoning the plant. Yes, they are going through a merger process, but that's not going to affect the plant. The plant's not going to be deserted. There were some safety concerns that they were going back and making sure everything was working appropriately and above standard of the ethanol industry, was the report that was given, and that they actually are starting to hire. They do realize they are short-staffed and are starting the hiring process. So the rumor out there that was quashed in the CAP meeting is no, they are not abandoning the plant, and they hope they wouldn't give a firm idea of when production would start, but the best that they could be pinned down to is 6 months before production will start, before the plant will be fully operational.
Well, you got to remember now, this is the first one of these in the world. And so they've run into some technical snags in terms of how the process is going to work. I got the sense,
like, what we have, 4 or 5 individuals, including the plant manager. We had a couple of vice presidents from, I don't even know where they came from. They're not from Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
I got the impression that they were still fully committed to figuring out how this is going to work.
Yes, they are. They are fully committed. They want to make sure that they are doing everything as safely as possible and as above board as possible, and they are working to make sure the plant is above the expected standards of the ethanol business, was the report they gave at the CAP meeting.
Sure. Well, thank you.
Anything else for Melissa?
No. Nope.
Melissa, thanks for the report. Next, we've got the Emergency Residence Project Agency Report. Carrie Dunwall, who I've not met yet, Executive Director. Hi, Carrie.
Hello.
Thanks for coming over.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
And welcome. Welcome to Story County.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm Carrie Dunwald. I'm the new Executive Director at the Emergency Residence Project. I've been there for about 6 weeks, so I apologize for not getting the report to you
beforehand. I was still crunching numbers late yesterday, but I do have it here if you want
to. Yeah, we would love to see it. And let me just say, we're so glad you're here. We're so excited about you taking leadership. But we really, really appreciated the job that Vic Moss did.
He was a
real benefit to Story County.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
All right, so what you'll see on the report here, last fiscal year, ERP assisted over 2,000 individuals. With it breaking down, we provided 680 people with 8,823 nights of emergency short-term shelter for an average of about 24 individuals a night, and the average length of stay was about 13 nights. The main shelter on Kellogg House 301 people, and the 379 were housed in the local motels. With our transitional housing program, we provided assistance to 54 people and 12 families with 6,566 nights of shelter, averaging about 18 people at a time with an average length of stay of about 10 months. And then the homeless prevention that we provide, we assisted over 1,300 people living in 517 households with our homeless prevention program. And again, the majority of that goes towards preventing people from getting evicted, helping out with rent, and that kind of stuff. Some of the other information is the same. Staff coverage continues to be the same in terms of services that we provide. Referral resources are similar. I updated the usage to date at the bottom, so you can take a look at that. Some upcoming changes, which I wanted to add, some of the things that I've been looking at implementing since I started there, we are going to be reformatting our intake process so that we're doing a better job of assessing people when they come in to the shelter, to identify the most vulnerable people, to make sure that we're meeting that most vulnerable need first and foremost. So we're going to be utilizing an assessment tool with everyone, and that way we can ensure that the people that are most vulnerable of dying on the streets, if we do not provide shelter, are getting provided shelter first and foremost. Then we're also going to be looking at collaborating with primary health care to provide some more one-on-one case management services to the gentlemen in our shelter to get them connected with resources to help streamline some of those processes and get them connected with resources that they may need so that they're more successful in exiting out of our shelter in a much much more effectively than what we're currently doing. And then once we work out all the kinks with that, we're hoping to start that service with our families then after the first of the year.
Well, the goal has to be that when individuals or families exit shelter, that we've done everything we can do to give them the tools so that we don't have to see them again.
Correct.
In the shelter situation.
Correct. And unfortunately, with ERP being so short-staffed and such a small agency, we're just not able to really provide as much in-depth case management as what a lot of our clientele are needing. So by bringing in primary health care to provide a lot of that, we're hoping that that will help get them connected with those resources a lot quicker and a lot more effectively than what we've been able to do thus far.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a great opportunity to conduct that outreach. I commend you on trying to put together that program. So talk to us real quickly. So as I understand it, there were some questions between ERP and the city of Ames in the way some funding was requested this year. And I know this was before your time, and I know you're coming in to try to figure it out. Just talk to us about where that stands and what we here in the county ought to be paying attention to as far as all that.
From what I understand, I've been in communication with the city and the county to kind of bring me up to speed on what happened beforehand and kind of where things are at. I know a couple of things that we're being tasked with is developing a better definition of what we quantify as residency to help clear that up, because as you may know, with the homeless population, residency may be a fluid definition. So figuring out how we can better track that information so that we're reporting it consistently as well as more accurately. So, for example, when someone comes to our door and says that they need emergency shelter, we may take their last known address of what is actually on their driver's license or state-issued ID. That may not be where they've lived for the last 6 months. It just depends. They may have been in Story County within the last 6 months, but the information that we may be getting is off of their ID. So we're doing a better job internally of figuring out how to track that information more accurately so that we can report it more accurately, and then working with the city as to develop what do we classify as residency so that we're on board with, so that we're all on the same page of what that means.
Super. Thank you. Questions for Carrie?
No, appreciate the information and the fact that you're working to update it and provide it.
Well,
I did, but
I need to ask it because it's problematic when you're talking about looking at the ID. They may not have been, or the driver's license, or whatever, they may not, if they have one.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever it's word of mouth type thing. You're asking them, okay, can you give me some information about where you were last staying and so forth? Are you asking for any type of notification, like a light bill, phone bill, anything at all that may indicate they might have had a residency? I can't imagine some of these probably having much of that.
And that's something that we need to figure out when we're looking at developing a definition of residency and what that actually requires. You are correct that right now a lot of it is word of mouth because a lot of people that we work with may not have been able to set up residency, but they have family here, they have supports here. So they've been staying here, but they don't have anything verifying on paper that they actually have a resident within Story County. So trying to figure out all those situations that they come up in and trying to figure out how that fits into a definition that we can all agree on in terms of what classifies as residency. The other part of that, as well as when we incorporate the assessment process that we're going to be doing, we're going to be asking a lot more in-depth questions of what has been going on with their housing situation versus just someone showing up saying, I need shelter, and us saying, okay, here you go. So part of the assessment is getting a lot more information about what has been going on with their housing situation over the last 6 months that has led them to needing our assistance for emergency shelter. So some of that we'll get a better idea of when we implement the assessment process as well.
Yeah, and for me, Carrie, just so we're all on the same page, the big deal to me is making sure that as we look at funding through the asset process, that all the funders are getting the same information at the same time. And the only part of it that really frustrated me is the idea that the city of Ames may be seeing a different set of facts than what the county was seeing. We ought to all be seeing the same thing, and hopefully that's where we're moving to.
That is my goal of what we're moving to, so that it's one reported process with the same numbers. And
then we just figure out where the funding comes from and how it's going to flow. I think we all agree this is a vital service. We're so appreciative to you for digging in and your work to help provide it. But we do have a responsibility to the taxpayers that we're all going to be on the same page of how we're funding it and who we're funding.
Correct. And we want to make sure that we're as transparent as possible within the services that we provide. And who's getting those services. So.
Well, again, welcome. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much.
No departmental reports. Other reports, announcements. Announcement of the applicants for county attorney appointment, which closed 43 minutes ago. Alyssa, what do we know?
Good morning. Yes, the posting closed at 10 a.m., and we have one application for the county attorney appointment.
Okay. And who is that?
That would be Jessica Reynolds. I did want to note that we do track on our online system to see how many hits we get for that job ad, and they have to actually go in there. We had 91, so people were looking at it. So the information was out there. So.
Okay. So we got one. Board, I don't think that changes anything for us. I think that we have scheduled Friday at 1 p.m. as an opportunity to interview our candidates, or in this case, our candidate, and make a determination as what's in the best interest of Story County going forward. I would suggest that we maintain full speed ahead to get through the process and see where we are at the end of our meeting on Friday.
Yep, I concur.
I would have ideally liked to have more, but then again, what we get, we get.
It's a pretty specialized job, and we were very specific in terms of qualifications that we were looking for.
I think we used input in a manner that I think will serve going forward, and I think it's a decision that will be made in September of this year, but I think ultimately it'll be the people's decision to concur in several years' time. I'm comfortable going forward.
Outstanding. Thank you.
Anything else? I have one question. You did say the applications will be made public.
Yeah.
Do you want?
I think everything needs to be available to the public. We also ask that we do a full background check. I think full speed ahead on that. And I think all of this, this needs to be as open and transparent as possible. And it's reasonable to me that the members of the public, I mean, we're talking about appointing somebody, their county attorney, that they have access to all the same information that we have access to. Okay. Melissa, thanks. Public forum number two, this is an opportunity for members of the public to address items not on today's agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Is anybody who wishes to address us? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, Wayne.
I just had a brief meeting with Carla yesterday. We spent most of the time updating and going over the regional governance board and some of the topics that were discussed there. Nothing really out of the ordinary. I just asked her to keep the children's mental health work group discussion alive with the region, because she did tell me that the agency out of Mason City that is now affiliated, partnered with YSS, did receive one of the grants of the $30,000 to be part of that transitional study. And so I'm hopeful that we'll hear more about that, but I'm sure that one of the Representative Heaton wants to look very closely at the Children's Mental Health Work Group delivery system, similar to the regionalization of the adult system. And so we need to make sure that we are able to communicate and track and understand how this process is going to unfold. And if the legislature wants to move in that path, that there's going to be funding set aside to help accomplish it.
Good. Thank you. Martin.
Process of Story County Rec Center being brought to fruition here in Nevada is going through the coalition phase. They have three options on site placement. Two within the Score Park facility on the north side of the hospital, and the third being on the hospital grounds itself. In the meetings that I have attended and the input, I look forward to seeing what the community feels. I guess the dynamic in play is they have come to a kind of a working consensus of the fact is if it's placed in the Nevada Score Park, it will be seen as a Nevada facility. If it's placed by the hospital, it will be seen as a county facility. That is a discussion item that is being had. The results will be entered up, I hear, sometime here at the beginning of the month. I look forward to seeing what the participants in this study give us. They think there's a really likelihood this will come to pass. The hospital will be partnering with the city and then in turn probably running a capital campaign to get this on a phase-based operation.
But are they clear that just because it's located at the hospital, that the hospital is not Story County?
What they have found, I think, as they brought this issue to them, Wayne, is the fact that Nevada has branded itself in a way that when they do the outreaching to the focus groups on the eastern side of the county and actually into Marshall County, too, because those are the people that are using the SCORE facility, they have found that the perception is when they come off New 30 there and they turn to the north, that was going into Nevada, but if they come in and turn to the south, it's Story County.
It
resides within the city limits of Nevada. It's just perceptions, and they have had to deal with that in ways they had not anticipated.
In perception, an amazing thing.
Sometimes it doesn't reflect the realities as we find them, but that is a dynamic that is in play. Okay. I look forward to seeing what everybody says.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for representing us in that group, and it'll be very interesting to see what ultimately that group comes out with as a proposal.
It will be shortly in the offing.
Nothing for me. Announcements, Wayne.
I think just that we have another forum tonight.
Yeah, two this week, don't you?
Forum, two tonight and one Thursday. Yeah.
One tonight, one Thursday. All right. Marty, you think?
Thursday at the library and Thursday is at the Ames Chamber. 6:30, same time.
Outstanding. All right. If there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.